Welcome to the Outlier Mindset Podcast, your guide for living a life by design. Here, we explore the journey of becoming an outlier, finding your purpose, mastering your mindset, optimizing your health, achieving financial freedom, and building a life centered around your passions. So tune in, transform, and thrive. Welcome to the Outlier Mindset. Let the journey begin. Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Outlier Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Robin Schley, and today we're going to talk about how to get our money right. And I've got the perfect person here to help us get us there. Brian Kaderna is a certified financial planner and founder of Kaderna Financial Team. Brian hosts the popular The Kaderna Podcast, and his books, The Millennial Millionaire and the recently published What Should I Do With My Money? Economic Insights to Build Wealth Amid Chaos, cements his reputation as a key national speaker and authority in financial planning and wealth building. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Rodman. I'm happy to be here.
Really excited. And one of the things I'm most excited today about is talking about money. I know that as an entrepreneur, we all like money. We like to make money. We like to go out and see how we can stimulate cash flow into our businesses. And you are the guy that I want to talk to when it comes to my money. You're a financial planner. You understand what it takes and what we need to be efficient to make sure that we can be the most successful that we can be when it comes to money.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, these are conversations I have with my clients all day long. And I think as entrepreneurs, you know, sometimes, yeah, money is definitely a goal, but sometimes there's that kind of passion project that might take over sometimes. And if we're ever ignorant of the finance side, sometimes that's when we're operating on borrowed time and there could be a rude awakening. So whether you like it or not, money is always playing a factor.
Yeah. You know, I've always thought no money, no mission, right? If you don't have enough money to sustain yourself and to be moving forward, how are you going to complete your mission? How are you going to complete missions in life? And so many entrepreneurs get so excited. They get so worked up about going out, putting that shingle up, going into business and starting that sometimes they forget about putting enough money away or getting themselves financially prepared for winter or some of those down times. And when they do that, I've seen so many people come to me and say, Robin, I failed. I started a business and I failed. But the problem wasn't that they failed. The problem was they weren't well enough planned financially to make sure they could get around that next corner, that next pitfall, that next, again, winter that they might have or experience as they're going through their process.
Yeah. And it's true. I mean, I think the life of an entrepreneur is someone that by nature is often a risk taker and they're bold. And that's what makes them good to kind of go out and strike it on their own. And so lots of times the same thing that makes them very good at what they do can also be one of their biggest detriments, where they go so fast and so hard at whatever that goal is, they don't think about those what if scenarios. And, you know, I've dealt with a lot of entrepreneurs and some extremely successful ones, and I've heard different takes on it. I see guys that say, always have a plan B, you know, if things hit the fan, where am I going to turn? What am I going to do? And then I see other ones that say, hey, you got to burn the ships. There is no looking back, full steam ahead. And, you know, either it's going to work or you're going to blow up. And so it's interesting because you kind of see both sides. I mean, I'm a risk taker, but I always like to make sure that I've got kind of a fallback. And that, I think, is sometimes a more prudent way, but that's my way. You know, some people out there, they swing for the fences and they might hit that fame and fortune or they might crash and burn. So it's a delicate balance that you got to kind of manage.
Yeah, you know, I've always felt like I'm a risk taker also, but I always say I'm a calculated risk taker. I mean, early on in my career, early as an entrepreneur, I was probably the guy who threw up that shingle and just said, let's go. Didn't think about anything else, didn't think about the money, didn't think about what I needed to set up to be successful or to give me the best chances of being successful. But as I went more and more and more into what I was doing, I learned how to be a lot more calculated in my risk-taking, how to do that planning, how to put away money, how to do the things that I needed to do to make sure that I was going to increase my chances of success by lowering the risks that I was taking.
Exactly. And I'm sure we'll get into some of it today, kind of the financial planning process I take with clients and entrepreneurs. But that's really kind of my mantra is I want to do the best that I can with your money to protect it and grow it and give you the highest probability of success. If someone says, you know, that all makes sense, but I want to put every ounce of energy into taking this gamble, you know, that's sometimes when I don't want to say that we part ways, but we'll agree to disagree in certain aspects.
Yeah, you know, I see a lot of people too. It seems like a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of people who are going down this business path, a lot of them don't come from money. Some of the most successful people that I've met grew up poor. They didn't have anything growing up. And, you know, they were trying to break that cycle, maybe that family cycle of not being able to generate wealth or maybe not understanding money. And it's always been important to me as an entrepreneur. And I came from very little myself. We didn't have very much growing up. And for me, it was one of those things where it's like, I want to make sure that I can go out, provide for my family, provide the success patterns that I need to really be good as an entrepreneur. But what would you tell people who maybe they don't have a good relationship with money? Maybe they're just looking, they want to go out, they want to do their thing, but they don't have that good, strong relationship with money. What should they start doing to start to understand the financial side of what they want to be doing in life?
Sure. That's a great question. And I think it kind of is exactly what you said, which seems to some folks counterintuitive. But I think when people don't have a good relationship with money, lots of times it's people that actually came from money. Mm-hmm. And the reason that I find in just dealing with so many people around the world on this topic is that if we do not value the dollar, then we make mistakes with it. And usually when you find someone that came from no means or very little means, and they start to get a taste of that success, they want to hang on to it like it's the only thing that matters. And that's where they can have a lot of respect and value the dollar. And then naturally, they're going to be a student of the game. They're going to constantly learn, how can I get better and better and better at managing my money so that I can manage my business and all my other endeavors? Where usually when I find people that, you know, struggle with money, they say, hey, I got a good idea, or I have this passion, I know what it is I want to do, but my finances keep getting in the way. Lots of times it is that scenario where they grew up. I hate to say it, that they were entitled, but I've seen that a lot where they say, you know what, I didn't have to work. You know, maybe I chose to work, but I didn't have to, because I grew up from a good upbringing and there wasn't a financial pressure or a financial worry. And so then when they're kind of out on their own, they don't have so much incentive because they feel like, all right, I want to do this. Hopefully it works. But if it doesn't, if I'm not smart with my money, there's always been a fallback. So I imagine there will be now. And that's where, like in economics, we have the term moral hazard. That's where moral hazard creeps in, where you don't fear the consequences. Mm-hmm. And I think that people that have had to earn it the hard way, they just naturally have so much more value in what they've accomplished that they have a better relationship with money. So to your question, like, how do you kind of, you know, cultivate that good relationship? I think what I try and do with clients is have a lot of kind of worst case scenario conversations, where even if it looks like, hey, I got it figured out, everything's going great, okay, you know, kudos, I'm glad you feel that way, I like the optimism. But what if X, Y, or Z happens? And I can share those case studies and then say, you know, this is the real world. This isn't a laboratory. You know, things are going to happen that blew your mind, that you never thought would happen. Are you ready for that? And that's my job as a fiduciary, is to talk with people and say, these things can happen. This is what we got to do to protect against it.
So how do you find this balance? So, like, I think about, again, thinking about the growing up, people who have grown up, like my grandparents, for an example, they grew up in the Great Depression, and my grandmother saved everything. I mean, it didn't matter what it was. There was going to be some use for this, whether it be old panty elastic, for crying out loud. It could be anything. They always said, well, this could be used for something. But they lived in this world of abundance, but they didn't really know that. It was all about, how can we make sure, because we lived through this tough time, that we're going to be okay. And you know, for me, when I didn't grow up with a lot, it's interesting. Now that I'm kind of in that place in life where we've done very well financially, the business has done well, we've just done very well for ourselves. I even got out of that mindset, that sight. I used to be a very budget-oriented guy. I used to look at monthly budgets. I used to look at numbers all the time. But then when I started making a lot of money, I quit doing that. And I still hold on to my money, But how do you balance that type of environment?
Yeah, so I think balance is the key word there. And I think that when you start to kind of, you know, hit these checkpoints, we'll say, in your life or in your career, it's okay to move past some of those worries that helped you when you were younger or when you were starting out. And what I mean by that is, you know, when you were maybe 20 and just trying to start this business, you might have been looking at the coupons on the weekend when you went grocery shopping for the week. All right. Once you've, you know, made that first successful business, you got $1 million in liquidity, you don't need to maybe spend an hour Sunday morning clipping coupons. So it's, you know, it's not that it's a bad thing to feel like, hey, I forgot some of those frugal habits that got me here. It's just that I think we have to kind of, from a 10,000 foot view, keep the mindset, even if we let some of the more minor habits go by the wayside. And I think that's the balance. And that's what I really coach a lot of my clients on, is that idea of pay yourself first. That guides our plans, whether we're making $100,000 a year or $10 million a year. If we know that we're putting X amount of money, a certain percentage of our income towards wealth building, whether it be in real estate, our business ventures, the stock market, as long as we're continuing that habit, then we don't have to worry about so many of the other outflows. Okay. Where early on in our career, it's all about outflows. How we only have so much money. How do we manage all these little expenses so we can retain what we do have? But I think it's okay to say, all right, I've kind of turned a corner. Now it's okay that I'm going to focus more on where I'm investing or what I'm doing as opposed to some of the other ancillary things. So I think that as far as kind of balance, it's the mindset that we want to have, but we don't need to keep every single habit. I mean, I'm exactly right where you said, you know, I don't know what my credit card bill is month to month. And frankly, I don't really care that much. It's like, it's there. I pay it off at the end of the month. You know, sometimes it's crazy high. Sometimes it's not as high, but I know that it has a use. You know, I wasn't crazy with my money. And as long as I'm putting away a lot of money as I plan, then I don't get bogged down so much in that.
But I'd assume that you also had the skill set. Well, I know you had the skill set that if things did change, if things, your trajectory went down or your earnings went down or your income went down to a point, you've got those skill sets where you understand money enough, you understand the budgeting, you understand cash flows, you understand how everything works, that you could tighten it up and still be just fine. Where I think a lot of people, like you were talking about these people who had money their entire lives, right? And maybe that relationship was, well, I don't understand the budgeting. I don't understand because I've never really needed to be on a budget or to understand it.
You got to kind of find out what your baseline is. You know, that's important. So some people that are out there, they say, hey, I've got a certain lifestyle, you know, maybe it's a lofty one. And they're like, this comes above all else. Like, I want to succeed in business, but I love being able to go out to eat dinner every night of the week, you know, things like that. Then it's like, all right, well, if that's the case, that's fine. That's your prerogative. But we've got a game plan accordingly to that. And we got to realize that if, you know, things go south, that may be jeopardized. Mm-hmm. Now, where I see some people really, really successful in like the higher echelons of business, you know, we talk a lot about stoicism. And a lot of stoicism is about how can I be happy with less? And if they really have that mindset where they're like, hey, I'm making $1 billion with this business, but if I lost it tomorrow, I honest to God, I would be okay because I'd be so excited to go do the next thing. That's such a unique talent. You know, I think even if you ever like read about Elon Musk, the guy half the times is sleeping on a couch. He could be sleeping in one of his offices. There's not a lot of glitz and glamour behind the scenes, but it's like he's conquering every business that you could think of. And I think that goes a lot along the way of like, you got to define who it is that you are and what your ultimate goal is. And then figure out where the financial plan kind of matches up with that end game. And if it's a lofty lifestyle, then financial planning may actually outweigh the entrepreneurial bug. Whereas if you're like, hey, if I make $1 billion or I lose it, I'm okay just being here in, you know, a little office in a one bedroom studio or whatever, then that gives that person a lot more latitude as far as how they could operate.
Well, I feel like too, we're just this consumer-driven society these days where, you know, everything is, we've got Amazon where we could have things at our doorstep, sometimes even on the same day. And, you know, I always find myself, there's something I see that I always need, or I think I need, or that more than likely is something that I really want. But I've always asked myself that question is like, I always tell myself, I've got everything that I need. Right now, I have every single thing that I need around me. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes there might be something that we have to have, but my wife gave me so much grief for years because I love tech. I love getting that new widget. I love getting this new thing. And I always thought, well, this is going to set me free in my business. This is going to help me over. But that was just kind of a cop-out. At the end of the day, I think we're so in tune to just spending and spending and spending that we end up with a lot of stuff that we think is going to help us that really, honestly, we don't need.
Correct. Yeah. And I think kind of something that, as you were saying, that came to mind, I heard recently an interview with Kevin O'Leary. He's one of the guys from Shark Tank.
Yes.
And he said, you know, what your goal should be, if you want to be an entrepreneur, you want to make it big. He said, you want to try and get $5 million in the bank. He said, once you get to that level, then the financial pressure starts to go away and you're free to then go pursue X, Y, and Z. And I kind of heard that. And I'm like, well, most people aren't going to get to $5 million just cash in the bank. But I was like, you know, what if instead of 5 million, it was 1 million? Or what instead of 1 million, it was 500,000? And that's where you start to kind of walk it back and say, well, for me or for my family, really, what do we need when it comes down to it? Do we need to say, all right, I mapped it out. And yeah, 5 million would set us free. All right, well, that might be, you know, 5 million might be to live a very nice life guaranteed. If you said we don't need all that, then it was 500,000, then that kind of turning point where you can say, all right, now I'm free to go after these things can occur much, much sooner. And so that's where I think a lot of the financial planning boils down to, what are our expectations? What is it that we want to feel comfortable, and what's it going to take to get us there? And that's sometimes where less is more.
Yeah, no, I could totally see that. But I also think about those people who do have big sums of money that they maybe stick in the bank and they're not getting right now. You can get some decent interest on your money in the bank, better than we have for years and years. But those people who stick that money into the bank, they let it sit there. They don't do anything with it. And I've always grown up feeling or believing that you always want to be eating your crops and you don't want to be eating your seeds, right? And so you always want to be eating off of the money that you're generating and keeping those balances as high as you can. But what would you tell that person who's sitting there with all that money just kind of squirreled away in places that's not working for them?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And I think just to clarify too, what I think O'Leary was pointing out wasn't necessarily like 5 million of cash. Mm. It was more like 5 million of liquid assets, whether that be cash or marketable securities. I think that's what he meant when I kind of listened to a piece of that interview. But to your question, yeah, I think what I often tell clients is you got rich people that work really hard and make a lot of money. And then you have wealthy people that work really hard and then their money makes a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And my goal as a financial advisor is to get us into that wealthy category, which people can define differently. I've seen people that have $10 million that feel like they're never going to get through tomorrow. And then I've seen people that got $100,000. They're like, man, I feel like I'm just set. And so that's where, again, that personal kind of, mode comes into play. But yeah, I think that you want to get your money working for you. You want to get it working sooner than later. And that's why with all my clients, I follow a very simple 4-step process. And that goes protection first, build liquidity, manage your debt, and then grow your money. And we follow that stream, no matter what their financial balance sheet looks like. That's the way that we go about it. We never really deviate from that. So I think a lot of people, the easiest conversation is that 4th step of, yeah, how do I make my money make more money? I think most people that resonates pretty easily with. But I like to say we're going to get there and we're going to do it in a smart manner. But first, we got to have that strong foundation. And once we've checked those boxes, then yes, we want to grow your money. We don't want to just park it on the sidelines, because then when we do that, we're essentially signing up for a lifetime of work. And I don't know anybody that just wants to do that. Even if they love what they do, they want to have the flexibility to say, all right, even if life throws me a curveball, I'm going to be okay because I have, a plan behind me. And that's ultimately what we're working for.
Yeah, you know, another thing that I hear a lot from entrepreneurs and people who are in business, a lot of them stay away from the stock market. They stay away from other investment vehicles because they always say, well, I'll just invest in myself. Before I go in and invest in this company, I'll invest in my company. I'll invest in what I am doing. And then I can control the outcomes more than I could say is something that might happen in the markets, right? So what do you tell a person like that?
Yeah, diversify. That's what I tell them, because I've seen that where, you know, I got a big client and it might be a notable name and people are like, oh my gosh, you got that client, you're set. And I'm like, well, not really, because I don't see much of that money as the advisor, because it's true. They close one deal or whatever. They make a lot of money and they're not like, hey, here, Bri, here's just a check for a massive sum. Go invest it for me. Usually the first thing that occurs is, how am I going to parlay this into my next project? And that's where, in that category of clientele, a lot of my conversations are, I don't ever want to slow them down, because again, that's what makes them so great at what they do. But I want to throw them, you know, those alternative ideas of just, hey, yeah, maybe the next project will be another home run, but what if it's not? And that's where we have to say, all right, a portion of these monies, these winnings along the way, let's just set it aside. And let's, you know, follow some other plans that I want to design for them as far as their wealth management and their portfolio, where we can offer maybe some tax advantages, we can maintain liquidity, we can try and get a fair rate of return, maybe in a safer manner. And we'll say, all right, you know, this is kind of protected money that we're going to put aside. And then, yeah, that other piece of the winnings, you want to go invest it in some other startup I've never heard of. If you believe in it, go for it. You know, that's your money. But that's where I start to play the role of like a therapist a bit, where we have these conversations of like, all right, let's, you know, slow down just a touch and maybe set some aside as protected money.
So when somebody comes to you, and I'm sure that the first thing you try to do is assess where they are, their own financial literacy, kind of find out where they've been, what their history is, what they know and such. But when you're sitting down with somebody for that first time, what are you trying to assess with them, and how do you go, what's your approach when you try to get them on a plan or try to get them moving forward in a direction financially that's going to be the most beneficial for them?
Sure. So first thing I ask, and it's in every meeting, no matter what, is how can I help you? And then we dive into, you know, what are your goals? If I'm working with you for the next year, the next 5 years, the next 15 years, what can we accomplish together that you feel like you couldn't just go do on your own? And I want to understand that. Usually when we first meet, it's either with a group of business partners or it'll be a husband and wife. You know, there maybe one is the business owner, the other is not. And I want to hear everybody's opinion. Even, you know, when we have this meeting and there's four other people in the room, the one that's not saying anything, I really want their opinion too, because everybody's opinion is equally valid. And the one that's not spoken in that meeting is the one that's going to kind of throw everything a monkey wrench way down the road. So we want to kind of tease that out of them. And then I just simply ask them, what keeps you guys up at night? You know, there's got to be some sort of worry. There's got to be some story you heard that triggered something in your head where you're like, oh, geez, this is, what if this is me? You know, we really want to try and get that out of them and try and create a space that's like a happy space, a judgment-free zone. Let's hear it all out. And then once we know exactly who they are and what makes them tick, that's when I dive into the finances and we start to understand the balance sheet, the cash flow, you know, so on and so forth. And I go in that kind of progression of, you know, where are the risks that we need to mitigate? How are we protected or not protected? Look into the liquidity, you know, cash is king, understand that for the rainy day or for the opportunities we might want to pursue. Then understand the debt picture, anything that's kind of dragging us down, and then go into growth mode from there. But that's how it starts. A lot of it's with the open-ended, you know, kind of tell me who you are and your why, and then we get into the finance side.
You know, sometimes we can aimlessly drift through our life, not really sure how to break the patterns and live the life that you've always dreamed of. I get it. I have been there, so caught up in chasing opportunities until I found myself in a life that felt foreign to me. It took me years to unwind the messy web to get back to what I've been put on this planet to do. And let me tell you this, purpose doesn't have to feel out of arm's reach. And I've designed a plan for you to do a little bit each day over the next 30 days in a challenge that I call the Outlier 30. It's specifically designed to help you find or create more clarity around your purpose. So if you're feeling lost and you want to finally turn things around and live that life that you were destined to create, sign up right now. It's free. You have absolutely nothing to lose and the whole world to gain. Visit gorodman.com/outlier30 today. You know, working with a lot of not just entrepreneurs, but even first-time entrepreneurs, people who are like, I really want to go out and do this. I really want to start a business. I really want to understand what I'm doing. I mean, a lot of them might sit here and say, well, what is a balance sheet? Or what is a cash flow? What is a pro forma? And for you and I, you know, of course, that's your life. You deal in it. Same with me as an entrepreneur. Been in it long enough where I get that. How important is it for that person who is getting ready to go out and start their thing, to start that new entrepreneurial venture, to understand exactly what those things are?
It's critical. I mean, and I can't underscore that enough. I mean, that goes back to what we were talking about at the outset, that if we're ignorant of the financial impact, if it doesn't crush us right now, at some point down the road, it will. That is almost a guarantee. Because no business just follows the straight up trajectory forever. We're always going to have, you know, mistakes along the way or things that happen. And that's where money starts to become really important. And in kind of the risk management side of our business, I always say that it doesn't matter until it matters. And then it's all that matters. So we need to start planning now, not right here and now, but in that scenario where things might go south and we say, all right, now it matters and it's all that matters. What do we want to make sure is in good order? And if we can plan now for that moment, that's where we're going to be in a better position. So if I'm dealing with like a day one entrepreneur, let's say that's a police officer or a teacher that had a great idea and they say, hey, I want to start this side business that I think is going to be a slam dunk. All right, that's fantastic. But maybe if you guys got a mortgage and you got two kids, let's start with the what ifs. And this is, are we cutting the cord and quitting our day jobs and going all in on this? Or do we maybe want to start to build this up to where we got our normal paychecks, but we're getting this to kind of a sustainable level before we take the jump? Those are some of the things that we're talking about. So it's not getting into the nitty gritty of accounting and all this stuff that they never understand. It's the basics of, hey, if this business just went away in a year, where would you be as a family? And if they can't give me a really good answer of how that would play out, then we need to have that conversation. And that's the things that I try and bring to light.
No, that makes a lot of sense, Brian. Because one of the things I always tell entrepreneurs who are talking to me or I'm coaching them through some things is they just want to go throw that shingle up on the wall and be in business. And I say, whoa, 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 whoa. You know, let's take a step back and go, okay, financially, where are you at? Now, you know, where are you at in your mindset? Are you physically ready for the job? And are your finances in order? Do you have your finances ready to help set you up for success? And if they don't have that good nest egg or that good security cushion for themselves, then I always say start with a side hustle. You know, start it as a side hustle and then make that side hustle make you have to quit your job. But everybody just wants to go quit the job because they think tomorrow, day one, I'm going to start bringing in money. And it just doesn't work that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe if you're young and you're still living at home, then, hey, maybe you can do that. You know, I started in this business right out of college and my parents thought I was crazy. They're like, man, you just went to college. You don't even really have a job. And so you don't get paid, you know, you get paid based on clients you bring in. There's no salary. Like they thought I was speaking Chinese. They were like, I don't understand why you're doing this. And then, you know, lo and behold, obviously it was tough starting out like it is for any business owner. But then it became this great thing that I'm really happy with. So I think it also depends on what stage of life that you're in too. And it's, I mean, some of it, frankly, is common sense of kind of matching up what are our obligations, what's our bottom line, and then what can we afford and what can we not afford? And then how does this kind of all fit into the mix? And yeah, I mean, if you're in that position where you got nothing to lose, either you're broke or you're single, you're on your own, or you're living at home as a young professional, that's an asset, believe it or not. That says like, go for it, go 100%. But most people out there are not in that position. They have obligations, they have responsibilities, and they can't just kind of go dive off the ledge and see what happens. they've got to do what you said and kind of take it in a kind of a more mannered approach.
Yeah, it's funny you're talking about your parents. And my dad was the same way. My dad was an educator his whole life. So he was superintendent of schools. He was my principal for a while. And it was one of those things where, like, I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And I knew it at a young age. And once I went out and started being an entrepreneur and doing well, he'd always come to me and he'd always just shake his head. He goes, "I don't understand what you do, but keep on doing it." You know, it's one of which is great. I mean, because, you know, a lot of times our parents might not understand, or somebody who's not an entrepreneur, they might not understand why we want to do what we want to do, but that's okay, right? That's what purpose is about. We were set up with a purpose to serve in this manner, and that's what we go out and do. But there's so many people that are sitting there who do have mission and do have purpose that's not aligned with what they are doing. They're sitting at a desk they don't want to be sitting at. They're doing a job they don't want to be doing. They're doing everything other than what they want to be doing. And there's this pain and this suffering they have inside, but they don't know how to break out of it. What would you tell that person? What do you think their first step should be financially to really look at how they could change their lives?
Yeah, and I can empathize with that 100%, because I feel like the people you just described, sometimes the biggest hurdles that they have in front of them are the people right around them. It could be their partner or their spouse. It could be their parents. It could be their friends. It could be their coworkers telling them they're crazy. You know, why would you ever do that? And then you listen to all these voices and it kind of puts you back into this like comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And then when you're in that space, it's hard to break out of, because like you already got enough of those conversations going on in your own head of, am I crazy? Is this really going to work? What could happen? And then if you have three people you trust and like that are right around you telling you that you're crazy and why are you doing this, it's very hard to kind of navigate your way through all of that and then take a little bit of that leap of faith. So I think from a financial planning standpoint, that's why I want to have all parties on board from the get-go. If I, you know, I get the phone call from a referral and it's, let's say it's the husband and he says, "Hey, I want to do X, Y, and Z. I want to set up a meeting with you. These are the things I want to accomplish, blah, blah, blah." I say, "All right, you know, that's fine. Let's set up a meeting, but can you please make sure your wife is there?" "No, no, it doesn't matter. You know, I kind of run the show, you know, I'll just show up." And so I do not do that.
Yeah.
that's like a no. But in rare circumstances over my career, when I've been like, "All right, if that's how we get started," 9 times out of 10, it doesn't work. And the reason is because one push comes to shove, then all of a sudden the wife or whoever it was that it was, "Oh, don't worry, they don't really have a say in the matter." Guess what? They have a say in the matter, and they might have a bigger say in the matter. And then the whole thing kind of goes, you know, off the walls. So I think those are the things that are important, is that your support group, you know, the people right around you, they've got to be on board first and foremost. And if they're not, you might have to cut them loose. You might have to say, "Hey, if you're not on board with this, I love you, but see you later. Like, stop giving me your input on what's not your business right now." Mm. And those are tricky things that you have to navigate that I think most entrepreneurs go through. But you got to have those conversations. And when you're ready to go, you've got to go full speed, you know, even with the backup plan or whatever it might be. But, you know, business and entrepreneurship is hard enough. When you have the people you respect and rely on the most telling you no, then it feels like it's impossible. So you got to get that figured out first, or it's going to be a really tough road.
I feel like, though, it'd be really good to bring in a financial planner for the sake of, I know when I tell my wife something, I could tell her 10 things and she's going to be doubting. She's going to be looking at me funny. She's going to be wondering. But then I could take her and I could sit her down with you as a financial planner. You could tell her the exact same 10 things and she'll go, "Oh, that Brian's brilliant. He's great." I mean, like, I just said this exact same 10 things, but sometimes you need to hear it from another professional or another expert to kind of sit down and go, "Okay, yeah, Rodman had this idea and I was doubtful, but then I had another conversation. We brought somebody in and he helped work it out so I could feel good about the direction we were going in."
Everybody's got that same scenario, that same example. No, not at all, man. I remember growing up as a kid, you know, my dad loved baseball, coached us a lot. And he was always on me real early on that when I caught the ball, I would put my glove sideways. And I was always just doing that and I'd catch it sideways. And he'd say, you know, hold your glove upright. So then as soon as you catch it, you can you know, throw it, you know, to first base or whatever. And I always went sideways. And then all of a sudden it was one team I was on where he wasn't affiliated. He wasn't the coach. And my coach was like, hey, Cardona, you know, roll your glove over, catch it upright. And I go home that day and I was like, oh, you know, coach said to hold my glove like this. And it made all the difference. And my dad was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, come on. Are you kidding me here? Right. So much like that. That's how we are in life. A lot of times the people that are closest to us, we don't hear it the way that we hear it when we hear it from somebody else. Our kids are like that. I don't know if you have kids, but my kids, I could teach them. Somebody else is teaching the same thing and they'll absorb it over there, but they won't absorb it from me.
I couldn't empathize with that anymore. I mean, that's so, so true. And I think that's the thing, like when I meet with a lot of people the first time, I tell them that all our opinions here are valid. Again, all the different parties, that it's a judgment-free zone and that they've got to be open-minded. You know, if they come in and they're like, hey, here's how I do things. This is the way I want it to go, period. Then I'm just like, well, why did you call me? Why am I here? Because unless I'm going to tell you something you didn't know, and then you adopt that, we have not made any improvement here. Mm. And so I always tell them, you know, not every change is an improvement, but every improvement is a change. So if you're not going to be open to that, then we're just spinning our wheels, you know, or you're just coming in waiting for me to validate what you're saying, which sometimes I will. But if it's not on board with what I think is going to help, I'm not just going to sit here and rubber stamp everything that you say, or there's no point in coming to me. And I think those are the things that, you know, especially when we get more successful, sometimes we get a little bit of hubris and we feel like I got this figured out. But I think the best entrepreneurs I've ever met, they know what they don't know. And so they're willing to say, okay, I'm going to hand off X, Y, and Z because that's just not my domain. And I'm going to build this power team that I could trust and rely on. And that's what frees them up to do whatever it is that they're great at.
Yeah, and I appreciate that. I think about step one, too. I think about taking that first step for these people who are in that place, who they want something different. They want something more aligned with their purpose. They want to be doing something different in their lives. But they're sitting there. They just don't know where to start. They don't know what that step one is. What would you tell that person who's sitting there going, I really want to get in tune with my finances, but I don't even know where to start?
So from a financial planning standpoint, that's where I really do encourage to go seek professional help, you know, and preferably a CFP, a certified financial planner, you know, which I am. I think that's kind of the benchmark in our industry of like, okay, that guy's been through a lot of credentialing, a lot of training and schooling to wear that designation. So if you're going to get professional help, obviously get qualified help. But then be open to that, you know, stop saying I'm trying to figure it out all on my own. And I'm on this treadmill here where I just don't know why I'm not getting any better. It's like, all right, well, maybe because you're just kind of keep doing the same thing over and over. So make that call, get some help, maybe not just from one referral, but maybe meet with a few referrals and see, okay, who seems to kind of know their stuff and have a really good resume. But also, who do I feel like I just kind of connect with, that I can have an open and frank conversation with of what it is that's bothering me and what it is that I'm trying to do, and then absorb some of those new ideas. That's the whole idea. Just like we get sick, we go to a doctor. We don't go to the doctor and tell them what we want them to do. We say, tell us what's wrong with me and how to get better. And then we probably act on that. It's the same thing with finance. I think you have to take that step of, I want to change things up because I want to improve. And then I'm going to have to embrace some of that change. You know, it's a lot of my clients, they don't get excited when they come in and I'm like, hey guys, we got to tighten the belt a little bit over here. We really got to focus on paying off some of this debt. And, you know, we're not ready to invest, or we're not ready for that because we got to clear some of the things up here. And then let's build a little buffer in the bank. You know, all that stuff I just said is not exciting. It's not fun, but these are like prerequisites to starting to build the good plan. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people got to come to grips with in today's day and age, is anything that you Google or you watch on TV, it's all this high flying, sexy stuff of where am I going to double my money and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's all well and good. But like, if we're not doing the blocking and tackling, then we're not building a plan. And that's one of the things I really try and tell people, to exercise patience, you know, do the right thing, but then let's be realistic that it may take some time. But if we commit to it and we know that it has a very high probability of a good income or a good out, good income and good outcome, no pun intended, then that's the course that we want to try and take.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. But I also feel like there's a sense of people who need the financial literacy or need the help. You think, well, it's usually the people who don't have the money. But I don't think that's true. I feel like it doesn't matter where you're at in the financial spectrum. You just have a different relationship with money. You just have a different way. It's kind of like the more money you have, the more output you have, the more that you're putting out, the more that you're spending. And it's not just a problem for people who are lacking money. I think financial literacy is a big problem with more than just your below average income or your low earners. I think the high earners are the same way. They have the same problems.
Oh yeah, 100%. I mean, I can't tell you how many people I met in my life, you know, whether it was in college or shortly thereafter, that said, if someday, if I could just make $100,000, man, like I'd be set. And then, you know, here we are, you know, many of us far, far exceeding that. And it's like, man, our financial worlds have never been so difficult. Like, what the heck happened? So it's true. You know, a lot of people just more, you know, just by having more doesn't mean that it's always better. So I think, you know, that sometimes can just make things more complex. So I think for that person that's starting out of like, well, I'm not really financial literate, but I don't need to be because I'm broke. I don't have money. You can't do nothing if you don't have money. You know, that sort of mentality. It's, you don't want to fall in that trap either of like, hey, I'm beaten down here at the bottom, so I might as well just stay here forever. That's such a loser mentality. That's mm-hmm. terrible. What you want to do is start to learn, when I get money, what am I going to do with it? And then you want to go out and you got to get money. And people say, well, you know, how do I make money? And I always just say, you work. And that's as simple as that. You know, it's all just basic math of inflows and outflows. And if we feel like, hey, at the end of the month, we're just not getting by, then either we got to cut back some of the outflows. Maybe we got to manage your lifestyle a little bit better. Or if we're like, hey, this is where we're at, it's our baseline, then guess what? We need to have a little more inflow, whether that's overtime, a second job, a side hustle, some consulting, or whatever the case may be. We can't make something out of thin air. We have to go out there and work at it. And then, yes, once we have some of that money, that's when the financial literacy can really shine. So the two go, you know, hand in hand.
Yeah, I remember too thinking about a dollar. What a dollar's worth today is not going to be what it looks like in 20 years, in 10 years, you know, just down the road. I just go back to thinking about when I was in college and I wanted to get out. I was like, you know, I'm going to graduate, I'm going to become a millionaire, I'm going to live in $1 million house, and I'm going to live in the lap of luxury at $1 million house. And, you know, what is $1 million house these days? I mean, what's $1 million today is so different than what was $1 million, you know, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. And I think people think in terms of today also way too much, and they don't think about what their money is going to look like in 5 years, in 10 years, in 20 years.
Yeah, I see it all the time. You know, sometimes I think a lot of the people that come to me, they worry about money, which, not that that's a good thing, but I think it's better than the alternative, because we can convert that worry into productivity and using that to really eliminate whatever that worry might be. But I have seen the people that you just described, where they feel they're 30 years old, they're 35, and they feel like, okay, I'm set. You know, I got this money. I'll be able to retire when I'm 60 and I'll be set. And just like you said, you know, inflation, if maybe you were ignorant to it for a long period of time, yeah, we didn't have any. It didn't really exist. Well, guess what? Over the past couple of years, like it or not, we've all been introduced to inflation, and we see what that can do. And so, you know, I think that's the thing. If you want to get financially independent, the whole point of it is that we've built up a plan that can survive a lot of different circumstances. And that's a difficult task. It's a tall order, but we got to start at it. And that's my job, is kind of being like the perfectionist, where I come in and sometimes people say, hey, Bri, you know, we meet with you and we love it and we feel like we did good, but then we walk away like, man, we got to step it up. And, you know, and that's what I tell them. I'm like, that's not a bad thing that you guys feel that way, but I don't mean to put that pressure on you. You know, I'm coming in as the perfectionist. and we're never going to reach that perfect level. But as I think it was Vince Lombardi said, we'll never achieve perfection, but along the way we'll achieve excellence. Mm. And that's what I'm trying to do, you know, with all these clients that I meet with.
Yeah. So you're bringing in people and, you know, I'm can only imagine that you've got a wide range of financial literacy that comes through your doors, where you've got some people that might know nothing, but you've got people who know a bit or maybe a lot. But I don't feel like there's any part of that spectrum that couldn't benefit from having an outside set of eyes, by having somebody like yourself who can come down and sit with them. Because sometimes we get so wrapped up in our own financial worlds that we lose sight of so many different options that are available to us. I mean, I talk to people about real estate all the time. I love real estate. I'm a real estate guy. And I'm always thankful that I've been able to get into my own home, that I'm not paying rent month after month after month, because real estate has been one of the greatest wealth building tools that I've ever had in my life. So I'm sure you see every bit of the spectrum of people.
Yeah, you know, I definitely do. And one of the things that is kind of a welcome surprise, and I think if there's anyone listening to this that is getting into our industry, they might benefit from it. When I started out, you know, and I was 21 years old, didn't come from a financial background, if you will. You know, my dad worked for the Army. My mom was a paralegal. You know, there was no one in the business world in our family bloodline. So when I kind of came into this, and you would think, oh, you know, we knew Mr. So-and-so across town. He was the rich guy. He had the money in our neighborhood or whatever. And it was always like, don't even bother calling him. Don't even bother talking to this guy or that guy, because they already got it set. Mm. And that was ingrained in my head. Like, oh man, anyone that seems like they're really worth it, they already got it figured out. It was the most welcome surprise I had, that eventually when I said, you know what, why don't I call on some of these folks, whether it was on some board I joined or whatever, they were so receptive to a new idea. It blew my mind. You know, some people that were just getting by, I'd call them and call them and call them. Oh yeah, Brian, maybe we'll meet with you someday. Yeah, we'll see. Maybe next year. And I was like, dang, I'm spinning my wheels just chasing these guys that are just getting by. And then all of a sudden I'd call, you know, this big, notable, you know, millionaire in town. And it was sure thing. You know, are you guys free next week for a call? And I was like, did you just say that? Like, you actually want to meet with me? And it was such a cool thing that the more and more I met with these like higher echelons, they were all relatively open-minded. And then as I'd meet with them, I found out that they didn't have one advisor that did it all. They had three or four advisors. And sometimes they had totally different ideas or schools of thought. And so when I came in with my philosophy, it was just throwing like one more arrow in the quiver that they said, like, all right, you know, I'm on board with this young guy or whatever. And I think that's one of the things I really learned, is that the people that really make it, they just keep staying open-minded.
No, I can totally see that. And that's what's about anything in life, right? I mean, whether you're an entrepreneur in business, and it's the people that can't check their egos at the door that stop growing, they stop learning, they stop being the best version of themselves because they're not open to that feedback or that advice. The people who are the most successful in life are the ones that are always open, the ones getting the coaching, the ones getting the financial information, the ones that are always open to receive what the world has to offer them. And I see that over and over and over again. And I tell people, it's like, if you really want to be the best version of yourself and be exceptional in life, check your ego at the door. Know that you don't know everything, and then be excited to learn everything that you can every single day.
Yep, exactly. I mean, I just, before we did this, I was just at a class for Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu that I've been doing for like 7 years now. And we always say that every class, you know, check your ego before you step on the mat, because you can go full speed and try and crush somebody. And you might win, you might tap the other guys, get a submission or whatever. But it's like, did you really learn? Did you get better today? Because usually the times that we get better on the mat is when we're the guy that's flowing through something new, and then we got caught in a position that we weren't comfortable with, that we weren't used to, and maybe we were the one that got tapped. And then that's the thing that you remember the next 2 weeks that you want to keep an eye out for. And I think that just kind of relates so much to life in general, is that our kind of learning moments, our teaching moments, are those times where we let our guard down, we try something a little bit new, maybe we make a mistake, and then that's the thing that then we remember. Whereas if we just go in and say, okay, I know what I know, I'm just going to go apply it, then we just kind of reinforced that for better or worse, but we didn't really get any better or any different in that day.
Yeah. Brad, I absolutely love this. You and I could probably talk for hours. As a matter of fact, we probably will after this podcast, but you know, I'm really glad you came on the show today. I want to make sure that people know where to find you so that they can get to you, pick your brain, get information from you, learn about what you provide.
Sure. I think the best starting point would be to go to my website, which is my name, www.briankaderna.com. That's BrianKudERNA.com. They have links there to some of the things that I write. I've got a weekly newsletter called Weekly Wealthy Wisdom that everybody can sign up for. I share a lot of different insights in there every Monday. You could check out the Kaderna podcast, where I talk about a lot of these topics and such. And then I'd love people to go check out my new book called What Should I Do With My Money? That really, it does feel a bit like my life's work. All the different things that I've found that work or don't work with clients and how they understand how money works and the economic impact of everything. I tried to pour all that research and all those experiences into this book. Again, What Should I Do With My Money? So please go check it out.
I love that. And that's such a great question. I think everybody who read that title is going to look at it and go, yeah, what should I do with my money? And you've got the answers in the book. So I love that. Hey, so I always close the podcast with a simple question, but one that I've always enjoyed asking. And that's if you could go back in time and sit down with your younger self and give your younger self the one piece of most valuable learning or information that you have, what would that be? What would you tell yourself?
Oh, that's a great question. there's probably a few things that I'd look back and I would tell my younger self, but one that just comes to mind right now, is don't worry, it'll be okay. And the reason I would say that one is, when I was getting started in the business, it's not that I was like worried and not surviving, but every day there was that kind of sense of like, man, am I going to make it? What am I doing? Am I doing the right things? You know, and there was just worry involved, which is never really healthy. And I remember some of the mentors, I said, they would see me and they're like, Bri, you're just going to kill it. You're going to have business that you can't even believe. And they would speak like with conviction. And I'm like, really? Cause today it does not feel like that. It feels like next week I might be out of business. And they wouldn't bat an eye. They would say it with just such certainty that like the sun is coming up tomorrow. And I didn't really believe it because I was like, that just sounds like fantasy. But I think that once you start to figure out like, okay, there's a process to success. And if you commit and you follow that process, then you've done your part and the outcome is going to be one that you could be proud of. Whether it looks the way you envisioned or not, you know that you're going on like the right track. And there were times, you know, where I guess I kind of like lost faith in that process. And then, you know, the result of that would be you'd have these sleepless nights where you're like, oh my gosh, what am I doing with my life? And so that's one that comes to mind, and it's a pro and a con. I think a lot of that pressure drove me to get better, to do better, and to work harder. But sometimes when it's not doing that, it's just a negative. So looking back, if I could know that I'd be right here now, I would tell that younger guy, like, dude, don't worry. It'll be fine.
It's going to be okay.
Yep.
Brian, love it. Appreciate you coming on the show today. Been very valuable. The listeners are going to get a lot out of this conversation that we've been able to have today. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I hope so. Thanks for having me, Rodman.
All right. Thank you, Brian.